Well, it is about 8:30, not quite, but that's close enough. We want to welcome you to our Holden Forerunner presentation tonight. We're going to highlight a lot of the events that took place 50 years ago, and we're going to talk about our vision and what we saw in our future for Holden, which I thought Steph gave a very wonderful account of how many of the traditions we began have continued all the way today into the present. A real compliment to our leaders, especially to Dr. Wilton E. Bergstrand, who is our program director and Bible study leader and the former head of the Augustana Youth Program of the Augustana Lutheran Church. Many of us had been with Dr. Bergstrand in leadership schools and Bible camps and had the opportunity to experience the flavor of his faith many times before coming to Holden Village. So this was an opportunity for us to spend an in-depth period of time with old Dr. Bergstrand. Gil Berg became our maintenance guy, our chief of staff for the work that went on and transpired. He was a retired fuel oil dealer from Seattle, and he spent 5 years here at Holden as the kind of operations managing director to help this place get started. So I thought tonight we'd begin with a favorite song that we sang as we welcomed guests who would come to the village, and one that we enjoyed singing. We didn't have any instruments when we were here, and so you're not going to have any instruments either. It's going to be a cappella to the melody of Do Re Mi. Let's see if we have a few musicians who can give us a good pitch. Okay, hit it.
H for high, we're glad you're here. O for O, look at that view. L for eyes, so bright and clear. D for volunteer and do. E for every open heart. And you'll never want to go from this lovely place apart. Holden welcomes you. Hello,
hello.
Here's your wealthy PM.
Hello. Somebody got it. We want to say quickly that we're delighted to be able to present our program tonight and share with you some of our experiences. We have a series of slides put into a video that we're going to begin with tonight, which will introduce it. It will, I think, give you a pretty good insight about the Forerunner's role and their activities. Following that, five of us will get up front here and we'll share some of our own personal experiences. Then we will open it up for any questions, discussion. And Phil Rue, the wife of one of our, the husband of one of our forerunners, will close it off with just a final word and a song, we'll see. So, whoever the media guy is around here, if he can take this thing over here to get it running, that would be appreciated. Anybody know how to do that? I guess Carol's the media gal who knows how to push the button.
The remote's right on the rock there.
And that spotlight could go off.
Is that cheating?
That's probably it. Anybody know how to turn the lights off there? Okay. That's probably enough.
And there's a light switch right
in the middle. Hi, I'm Nova Case. I was one of the 40 work campers coming from all over the United States and Canada in 1961 to be the first group of campers to come to Holden Village. The average age of the work campers was 20. A few were seniors in high school. Most were in college or university. Several were teachers, one a CNET Mason, one a social worker. It was amazing how each one's background of experience, interest, and skill contributed to the common good. In this slide is a picture of Liz Lindholm, who hosted a forum for our 25-year reunion. We met at Lake Chelan the evening before the trip up the lake. Gil told us about Holden, and we could hardly believe that all that was there looking at the bare hills of Chelan. Holden is a place apart. The only way you can get there is by boat on Lake Chelan, 1,500 feet deep. A 3.5 hour trip on the Lady of the Lake, and 12 miles up the canyon by truck. Thus, it is a place apart where a person can unwind and see his life in a new perspective. There are no radios, no newspapers, no magazines, no TV. While we were there, there was no electricity, no hot water, no lights. I have never been anywhere from which, from the moment I arrived, I felt so completely apart from the world, and where I could so clearly see the world from which I had come and to which I would return. The village is magnificently located in the heart of some of the greatest wilderness in the world, 170 miles from Seattle and Spokane, equal distance from each. The Cascade Mountains, which surround the village, tower to heights of 7,000 to 10,000. It is a region filled with glaciers, trout streams, and waterfalls, mighty forests, abundant mountain flowers, and deer and other wild game. There are many miles of hiking trails and unlimited opportunity for mountain climbing and horseback riding. The grandeur of the setting is unique. We were amazed to find Holden Village nestled in a narrow valley, surrounded by spectacular mountain peaks. Buckskin, Copper, and Dumbbell on the south, and Martin Ridge and Bonanza on the north. Our hearts were overjoyed by our first glimpse, and many eager adventurers found themselves exploring the village. There is something about the mountains, their size, their stability, their serenity, that makes you feel small, at the same time secure in the hands of God. Here is a picture of Chalet 2, which has since burned down. Main Street gives a glimpse of the mountains and their snow, even in the summertime. A view of some of the two-story dormitory buildings is seen at the right of Main Street. This was the hospital, which is now Agape. This is the old bridge that used to be there before a landslide came down one winter and took out the old bridge. The new bridge has replaced it. Here is a picture of the 40 work campers who first came to Holden Village in 1961. When we first arrived. This is a picture of us all dressed up, ready to go back to civilization at the end of 1 month. Gil Berg, a dedicated layman who is now the mayor of Holden Village and acting director, was in charge of the work projects. Bertha Pearson was our able cook. Zelda was her helper. All our food was cooked outside on the stove that's now in the museum, on a wood stove outside Chalet 1. Reuben Thompson and Butter, the dog, was the custodian. He spent the first winter alone at Holden with Butter. Dr. Wilton Bergstrand, youth director of the Augustana Lutheran Church, was the program coordinator, working with the Work Campers Council. We had two nurses, Fern and Marie. This is the picture of the staff. On the left is Professor Laris of Pacific Lutheran University, who was the biologist. Next is Reuben, and then Gilberg, Dr. Bergstrand, and Bertha. The forerunners, as we later decided to call ourselves, were organized into four groups of 10 members each. Each group was responsible for one of the four phases of the program. The teams were the devotional, recreational, cooking, and cleanup. We could easily see that there was much to be accomplished, and that we could only perhaps put a dent in this great job. However, we all eagerly look forward to putting our shoulders to the giant wheel. So the boys went up on top the tailings and threw down pieces of wood that we could use that were on top of it. Here's another picture of them throwing down the wood down toward Railroad Creek. In this place apart, we learned to be together. in peeling potatoes, washing dishes, washing clothes, raking a trail, cleaning, washing windows. In a thousand ways, especially in the company of sweat and dirty hands, the fellowship came alive and went very deep. The kitchen was and the dining hall was an incredible, well-nigh hopeless mess. In one place, he dug away in packed with grease 4 inches thick. But finally, the entire dining hall and all the equipment was gleaming clean. The last night, we held a banquet in the dining hall, which gave us great satisfaction. We did many new things, like learning to use a crosscut saw, clearing trails and breaking trails. This was up to Copper Falls. One day, Gil asked us to rake the road from Holden to Lucerne. That meant taking all the rocks and things off the road so that trip by the buses would be free of hazards. Sometimes the rocks were a little big, and there were easy ways of doing the job. Much cleaning took place during this time. Everything had to be wiped down because there was dirt everywhere. We used many, many rags. Here is another one gathering firewood. And the guys go a little faster at the crosscut saw than the girls. This was our mechanic, Jim Felton. He was one of the truck drivers also. Some extra work hours were given to completing special projects. For instance, the cement mason spent 12 to 14 hours a day laying the foundation for the power plant. Generators were barged up to Chelan, and the guys went down to Lucerne to help offload the generators and get them on the truck. Then they were brought up to Holden Village, and they had to be slid into place. This is the generator crew. Another big job was repairing the dining hall chimney. It had all fallen down when we got here. You had some great views working from the top of the chimney. Here's another picture of the scaffolding working on the chimney. The Lord Kirk said, cleaned up the barber shop and became the village barber. Little wonder that the number of the fellows passed up the joy of shaving with a Gillette in the ice-cold water and grew beards. For us girls, we had to find a way to take a bath. Often the stream was the best way, although it was pretty cold. We had no lights at all in the village until the last days, when a group with its offerings brought a little portable light plant, which we called the QP, Quad Peak Powerhouse. Then the fellows fixed up a couple of old wash machines to the fireplace back of the chalet and built a wood fire, heating the water, stirring the wash with a stick and rubbing it out by hand. One gets a new appreciation for the automatic washer and dryer back home. The day's schedule was something like this. Morning devotions at 5:45 was followed by breakfast out of doors at 6. The first work period was from 6:30 to 9:30. After a snack break from 9:30 to 9:45, the second work period continued until 12:15. Dinner was at 12:30. The afternoon was for letter writing, meditating, clothes washing, hikes, team meetings, and Bible study cell leader briefings. At 4:30, Dr. Harold Leras of PLU, our naturalist for the month, led us nature study on the bird life, the geology, the animal life, the trees, and flowers of the area. Supper was at 5:30. Bible study was from 7 to 8, at least an hour each day. Dr. Bergstrand led the Bible study during the message. We studied the life of John the Baptist and the Book of Ephesians. This is how we came by the name of the Forerunner. One time we climbed up on Martin Ridge. All of us to have a bicycle study up on top of Martin Ridge. One evening, an engineer who had worked at the mine took us a mile into the mine. What a fascinating experience. The huge rooms, one finished off like a great arena, others as big as 5 football fields from which ore had been taken. We dropped a stone down one shaft and it was 23 seconds before we heard it hit water. It said there's another 4 million tons of copper in Copper Mountain. The tracks are now being removed from the mine and the entrance will be blasted shut. Even the 3 great piles of brown tailings from the mine, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, 3/4 of a mile long and 1/4 of a mile wide, and 100 feet or more high, are an impressive sight. This is the opening to the mine as we saw it. This is the building that evidently the snow had collapsed. One of the things that we were aware of was the danger of fires, and we have a fire chief. Our fire chief is John Hill. One day he briefed the girls on the use of the fire equipment and later called a surprise drill. In 3.5 minutes, the girls had the holes laid out around house number 3 and had water pouring on a make-believe brush fire. Then the trouble began. In their enthusiasm, they ran the holes out too far, for Union was the first and had to back up. Liz Lindholm had failed to put the nozzle on correctly. And as a consequence, the water exploded all over everyone. Gail attempted to assist Liz and got a thorough soaking when the nozzle fell off. After 3 attempts to correct the situation, we learned that the nozzle just did not fit. The fellows from the men's team enjoyed the show very much and handed out much free advice as they photographed the humorous situation. When it was time for all of us to go home, we piled our clothes in the street, and some of them were totally worn out. And we had clothes burning. The miners' village was there when we arrived. It was fun going through the miners' village. We found dishes still on the table and clothes on the line. This is a view of the miners' village as we saw it looking down from the 3rd level. The next pictures are before and after pictures. 2 years later, all these houses were burnt by the Forest Service. And so we have some pictures showing before and after. This is one of the miners' houses, the bonanza in the background. This is afterwards. It's gone. This is one of the streets in the miners' village. This is after the houses were burned. We had some great overnight hikes. What a thrill to be hiking along a trail and have suddenly burst into view a mountain meadow, or a snowfield, or a series of waterfalls, or a mountain lake, or a snow-crowned peak. The hikes to Copper Creek Falls, to the top of Mountain Ridge, to Heart Lake, Lyman Lake, and Cloudy Pass, to Stehegan, the work campers will never forget. The early risers among the hikers prepared hot mush and thick slices of ham, which provided the necessary energy to conquer several thousand feet of brushy and snow-covered slopes. Our trail led us past Heart Lake, Crown Point Falls, and Lyman Lake, and finally our destination, Cloudy Pass. At this point, we appeased our appetites with ham sandwiches, dried with prunes and raisins while seated in an alpine meadow where there were vistas of mighty peaks which thrilled us greatly. A snowy hillside invited our interest and soon skiing became a must to many. This was a new experience, especially on the 4th of July. The snowy slopes which had taken 45 minutes to climb took but a few minutes to descend. For some of us, Image Lake with Glacier Peak in the background was the culmination of our hiking. The last pictures are pictures of the village as it was in the winter when the miners were. Some of these slides were given to Gil and he gave them to us. To see Holton Village is to be convinced of its great possibilities. Here for once, the seeing is greater than the anticipation. We have yet to meet a person who has been to the village, was negative or even neutral about it. All are enthusiastic. I will end this with a verse to How Great Thou Art that was written by Dr. Bergstrand on a hike that we went to Heart Lake where the three waterfalls come down and meet. He wrote this verse to the song and gave it to us when we arrived back at the village. And with it, when amid majestic snow-crowned mountains, far from the cities pressed and fret and stir, I heard the rumble of cascading fountains and walked neath skies of blue and stately fir. Then sings my soul, Almighty God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art.
All our forerunners who are here will come on up front, please. We'd like to take now just a little bit of time and have each of the present forerunners introduce themselves and give you a little glimpse of who they were in 1961 and then what they became. So we'll start with Bill Flatt down there.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bill Flatt from St. Albert, Alberta, Canada. I was a pastor in southwestern Saskatchewan and heard about the information. I'm here not as a forerunner, but as a representative of a forerunner. I would like to tell you the story of Joanne Johansson Flatt from later years. Let's see, what else was there to be shared? I think that's events in my life that led to here. I was involved in the Lutheran League youth work and have gone to the International Lutheran League Convention at Miami, Florida, and received the youth magazine One, which shared the information, gave me the information as to a young adults retreat, the first young adults retreat that was held here. And a pastor from Oregon, neighboring pastor in Saskatchewan, dropped me off here, picked me up at the Space Needle on the way back, and that's how I came to be here and part of this great venture.
Thank you. Sonia Demeter will...
Do I have to stand?
Of course.
Yeah. I do have to stand.
Of course. Everybody can see you better.
I've got some notes here. Jim tells us certain things we have to say. I'm Sonia Demeter. My home church and city at the time, 1961, was Temple City, Bethlehem Lutheran Church in Temple City. I lived in Rosemead, which was right next door.
California.
Rosemead is east of Los Angeles, a suburb of Los Angeles. And then my occupation after Holden, I became a social worker first and then a probation officer. Events in my life that led me to Holden. I was born baptized a Lutheran, and but I think one event that I should say that led me to Holden is my father was an outdoorsman, and when I found the announcement about Holden and brought it home to my parents, he wanted to go himself. So he went vicariously through me. He really was a big encouragement because this was his kind of thing, and that had been passed down to me too. I was athletic, and I was an outdoors kind of person, but my father took me, the minute that I got a letter that said I'd been accepted, he took me out and bought me a pair of hiking boots, which I had never worn hiking boots before, and you know, just outfitted me for it because he knew what an adventure it would be. And I guess the fact that I was in the Lutheran Church, attended Sunday school and Luther League and so forth, and I received the Lutheran magazine, I can't think of the name of it, Augustana
Church Lutheran newsletter. Companion.
Yes, the Lutheran Companion. Okay, it was an article, the Lutheran Companion, that I saw and decided that was something that I would like to do. My connection to Holden since 1961, I've been back four times and I have brought my children here. Now I have grandchildren and that's my next endeavor, is to see that my grandchildren have come here. And introduce my family members. I have only my husband here now, John, in the white shirt. He's got it, John. No, just sit. that's about it that we have to do at this time. Huh?
That's right.
Okay?
Good job.
No, it wasn't a good job.
My name is Mary Hedman Rue. I was Mary Hedman at the time. I'm from Seattle, and I spent my childhood in Africa. My parents were missionaries. Mm-hmm. My dad taught at the Lutheran Bible Institute in Seattle. And my connection with Holden came about as probably the year before the Forerunners, in 1960, when Wes Preeb offered Holden to LBI, Lutheran Bible Institute. And my parents and another family came up here that in 1960 and checked it out. You know, going to a ghost town, what could be more fun for kids and a family? So there were a number of kids. We have four kids in our family, and the other family with us had children. And we had a great time just checking it out. And then went back. They decided, LBI decided it was too big of a project for them to take on, but suggested that maybe the Lutheran Church could take it on as a whole. And that's how we knew about it. And as soon as we knew there was going to be some action up here, you know, my dad, I'm sure, got on the phone and talked to Wilton Bergstrand, who was his buddy, and here I am. let's see. To Holden. Okay, connection to Holden since 1961. I came back a couple years later by hiking over from Darrington, 23 miles or whatever it is, 21, 23, something. I was in nurses training at the time. It must have been 3 years after. I was in nurses training at the time. I went 2 years to LBI and then went to nurses training, and we had a little break in the summer. And I came home and was asked to help lead a youth group across the mountains with this other fellow and as co-sponsors for the kids. And there were about 15 of us hiking over. And I wore my duty shoes over the mountains. I was too cheap to buy boots. But I didn't get any blisters. So I made it work. And so that was one time, and then I ended up marrying a pastor, my dear husband, Phil, and he would come up for theological conferences. We've been up several times. I joined him on those. And also we've taken members of our congregation's big groups up here occasionally. So I've probably been up here five or six times since. And the only, my husband is Phil. And then my brother is here, and he was in that 1960 trip with me. My brother Dave and his wife Lois. Raise your hands. Thank you.
I'm Bob Gonski. My name is spelled with S-K-E because I'm a German. If you put an I on the end, it wouldn't be German. So anyway, I grew up on a dairy farm. My dad came to this country in 1910 from Germany all by himself. Took off in the middle of the night, hopped the ship, and come into Philadelphia and landed in Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, and that's where we're at yet, in northern Wisconsin. Grew up on a dairy farm, and I'm the 12th member of a family of 13 children. And my younger brother, which is the 13th, I'm in partnership with a dairy farm with him. But actually, after high school, I stayed home 1 year to work on the farm, and then I decided to go off to school. And I had a sister that went to LBI in Minneapolis. And she eventually, actually when I started LBI, she was in Tanzania. It's a small world. So she kind of encouraged me to go to LBI, and during the fall of 60, my first year at LBI, the Augustana Senate headquarters was in Minneapolis. So they had a movie of Holden, and they were looking for volunteers to come. And so I was pretty well excited about that and signed up for it. And there were two gals and two of us guys from the Bible school in Minneapolis that were part of the forerunners. And so we come here, and after I left, I continued at LBI and finished up the two-year missions course. And then I had to decide what to do next, and so then I enrolled at the University of Wisconsin in Madison with the idea of someday being an agricultural missionary. And so I spent 5 years down there, got a couple degrees, and at that time my father was 75 years old, and he was farming it with my younger brother, and I decided to go back home and form a partnership with my brother, and that was 45 years ago, and we're still talking yet as brothers, which is a feat in itself. And there was a couple of reasons for that. We decided when we started, number one, you have to live on separate farms, houses on separate farms, so you had some privacy for the family. And probably the most important reason was we sent the wives to town to work. They had no part of the operation. They had their careers. My wife was a registered nurse, and my brother's wife worked as an aide at the hospital. And it worked real well, and we're still getting along good. So anyway, I'd like to introduce, well, a couple years ago, I decided that at our 50th reunion, I'd like to take my whole family out here. And we come back in 66 for a 5-year reunion, and I brought my new bride on our honeymoon up here in 66, and then in 81 we come with three teenage girls. In 86 we come with the same three teenage girls, but yet we had another daughter which was 2 years old. And so we brought my three daughters. My fourth daughter, the younger one, just finished medical school at the University of Wisconsin, is now doing a residency up in Duluth, Minnesota, and she couldn't come with her husband and our fourth grandchild. So I'd like to introduce my wife, Judy. My oldest daughter, Teresa, who is a math professor at Northwestern College in St. Paul. And her husband, John. My next oldest daughter, Gretchen, and her husband, Steve. Steve is holding our 2.5-year-old granddaughter, Eileen. And then we have Hannah. These are our granddaughter. And then we have Asa, almost falling asleep up there. And so, and then we have Kristen. That's our third daughter. So that's our family, 10 of us, and we hope to come back in 5 years and bring our last daughter and their family. So.
Hey, give them a hand.
Oh, actually, I was going to call Judy up to my wife to talk about when we come on our honeymoon up here.
Nothing like putting me on the spot, huh? Actually, 1966 was my first introduction to Holden Village. When I came here as a new bride, we had driven from the Twin Cities. We left Sunday morning and we drove almost straight through until we got into Chelan Tuesday evening, and we slept on the floor in sleeping bags at the church. We got on the boat the next morning and came to Holden. One of the things, things have changed a little bit in these 50 years, because when we came back this time, we were pleasantly surprised to see that there were not twin beds in every room. In 1966, there were. Oh. You spend your honeymoon in twin beds. But we had we did take an overnight to Lyman Lake, and my husband got very creative, and we zipped our two sleeping bags together. So that's how we spent the rest of our honeymoon. And like I said, he said we've been back several times since. We are glad to be here.
And how wonderful to see all of your kids and grandkids, except for one of them.
Yes, we're very happy for that.
I'm Jim Weibert. I came from Arlington, Virginia, via Gustavus at office in St. Peter, Minnesota. I was a part of the old Augustana Lutheran Church, and I had known Dr. Whitney Bergstrand for probably all of my high school years and part of my college years, so he was a big attraction and a draw and a motivator for me to come for the month up here in the mountains. So I have to give a lot of credit to old Bergie, as we call him. His wife, Dolores, was a marvelous companion. They had their two kids with them. She became our kind of mother for the month that we were here and shepherded us through some of our own bumps and bruises and haircuts and everything else that we needed done. The intention that I had, I suppose, in coming was pretty down to earth. I graduated from college. I was flat broke. I had a car that ran very, very well, and I didn't start a job until August 1 in Chicago, but I had no money, and Holden offered me free room and board, if only I could work a little bit. So I came to Holden not for probably the finest of motives, but I knew it was a place apart. And I knew that I would have time to refresh myself and that I could have an opportunity to experience life in community with a whole lot of other young adults. So those were the exciting motivators for me in coming to Holden. I was also seminary bound. I knew that I was going to go to seminary. I was in the 10th grade and had been preparing that all the way through college. And finally had taken a job as a youth director in a church in Chicago where I would have some money. But you know what really got me here? Mobile Oil Company sent me a credit card, no questions asked, a month before I graduated, congratulating me on my achievements. And so I charged for 2.5 months without paying a dime. I finally got it paid off, though, by November. The family I have with me is my wife, Lorray. Where are you, Lorray? There she is, mother of our four kids, all of whom have been here at different times in our life. I think we've been to Holden now at least four times, and we volunteered one summer 4 years ago, and after about 14 days, the sheriff came and ordered us out of the village because of the fire. We want to, especially as forerunners, say thanks to Steph and to Chuck and to all the staff. All of you have made the welcome we received so special. You've made us feel special, and we thank all of you so very, very much for the welcome party, for the gifts, for showering your attention upon us for a few days and reminding us that we did have a part to play in the establishment of Holden Village. We have a work song on your song sheet. Again, you're going to have to sing it by yourself with no accompaniment. Does everybody guess the tune?
The Happy Wanderer.
The Happy Wanderer. Happy Wanderer, okay? You musicians out there, give us a pitch.
I love to work among the pines upon this golden task, and thus to serve our God and King beneath this clear blue sky.
When we came up on the boat, it was as I had anticipated, because I had been there the year before. I knew it was going to be a real mess. I guess it would. When we came, it was June 15th. It's really cold at night in June. And I was reading some of the logs that we took, made diaries and have them all taped up or typed up in the museum. But it was 34 degrees, 36 degrees, you know, 42 in the mornings. The temperature was recorded every morning. So it was really cold. We came up and immediately set to work trying to find a spot to lay our heads that night and clean it up just a bit. We pretty much stayed in the chalets, except there was a group of girls that stayed in the hospital. We called it Agape, right? But I was in a chalet, and you know, we just scrubbed this up and laid our sleeping bags out, and had to. The gong went off at 5 in the morning. And already up here was Bertha Pearson, our cook. And she had to make meals for 41 young adults over an open fire. And then we found a wood-burning stove. I believe, did we decide it came from Holtonville, the village?
One of the mining houses.
The miners' houses. So we actually have homemade bread, and we have wonderful meals. Bertha was a seasoned cook. Oh my goodness, she was good. And we all helped her. It was really cold eating outside in the mornings, and we started our day with breakfast and devotions, and then off to work. And we worked from, 6:30? About that. You guys can fill in. I might be telling you lies, I don't know. we were divided into four groups as four teams, and our duties as team members, I've got to refresh myself here. One of them One team would be in charge of devotions morning and evening for a week. Another would be recreation. Another would be meal prep. And then the fourth one was meal cleanup. So those were our housekeeping duties. And then we had Gilbert, who would get us on projects, you know, like clearing the road from here to Lucerne, that kind of thing that you did. We were so glad for break time at 9:30. Oh. And lunchtime, it was all great. Hospitality, I want to talk about that just a tad bit. 4 days after we had been here, we're just trying to get our, you know, our act together here and get the place somewhat clean. We had 65 guests. What happened is that there was a large convention in Seattle for the Augustana Lutheran Church. And Wilton Bergstrand said to the leaders of the Augustana Lutheran Church, which is a huge church body, he invited them to come and check out Olden, this wonderful place. And so they actually chartered a boat to take all 65 of these guys up to Holden. And then, what do we do with them? Here we're trying to get our feet on the ground after 4 days. And Bertha and some of us that helped in the kitchen put on fried chicken dinner for 65 people plus 40 of us, 100 people. And the salad was hollowed out watermelon things. You know, remember how we used to hollow out watermelon things? And fruit salad. I mean, that's all I know about, is those two items on the menu. But isn't that impressive? Yeah. All we had was cold water. We had no hot water. We had to heat everything on our wood stove. And I just think it's... But I just think it's totally amazing. It's sort of like living in Africa, you know? Okay, let's see. What else was I going to tell you? My duties that I helped with a lot was the window washing. And we washed 9,779 panes, amongst other washing duties. Anyway, somebody else can talk now.
Hey, Mary. Bill Flass' wife, Joanne, died a couple of years ago now, and he'd like to just spend a couple minutes and tell you about her contribution behind the scenes.
Thank you. I feel privileged to be able to give you an inside story of Joanne's involvement with Olden Village here from a way out perspective, because I really wasn't part of the forerunners. I just happened to become acquainted with one of them in a very casual way during the week that we had. And this was in 1962 when the village had staged the first young adults retreat, which was young adults from the 20s to the mid-30s, late-30s, and we were about 35 of them here. And what I remember from that time on, which really involves Joanne particularly, but also the other workers as well, I remember coming in to do the registration here. And while the others were jostling for first place in line to get their assignments for their rooms and get the exciting weekend on, I was somehow sort of, I don't know how I should put it, starstruck with the treasurer and the registrar of the group. Apparently, Gilbert had seen those abilities within her and asked her to be the registrar, and she ran the office. And I was kind of spellbound while the others were milling around to see the precision with which she did her job, detail to duty, the ability to be able to write out the bills and to collect the money and to give the keys for the rooms and so on, and do it with such grace and poise and pleasant personality that it sort of took my breath away. You were it. We had very little direct and personal contact. And from that point on, I think I can share with you the kind of experience that one of the first participants in the program of the Holden Village had upon me and upon the others. I don't recall in the full week that we were here the provisions that were there for everything and anything that we did. One of the highlights of our week here were, of course, the hikes up into the mountains. And it was the forerunners who planned them, led them. We went out to Copper Basin as a sort of a first run. And then we had planned the big trip to right up to Image Lake. And while we were planning the trip there, one little blonde girl with a fabulous voice but with an extreme heart condition wanted so badly to go on that trip that nothing was going to stop her. Everybody in the camp and her doctor had told her, don't even try to go on that trip, it'll kill you. But she would not relent, and nothing that we would say made any difference. So in the morning she disappeared, and we searched the camp, and she was nowhere around. So we decided that we would go on with the hike. And we hiked down, I think it was past Heart Lake. Beyond that place, there was a cabin there with layers of places where we could sleep, and the whole group of us slept up in those bunks. And when we arrived there, there she was waiting for us. So we as a group took it on ourselves to be her support group in that venture for her. We carried her knapsack, a sack, and we held out our hands in every higher step that we had to do. Some of them even went behind and pushed. And we saw sometimes she was breathing heavily and slowing down, and so we would find a place to stop and wait until she was able to catch up and also to rest up so that she was able to continue. What was remarkable is that by the time we reached the upper ridge, I don't know what it's called, Cloudy Pass or what it is, we noticed that her breathing had become less labored and more harmonious, and we kind of felt that she was on her way to be able to making the trip. We slept at Image Lake underneath a sheet, a plastic sheet, which fortunately the forerunners, and I have to say this because all of you know that every one of you here is here courtesy of the kinds of things that these people have done in the background that made everything work out. They did all our packing, our foods, everything that we needed. They even thought of that sheet so that we could get into our sleeping bags, snuggle up to each other, pull the sheet over us, and all the dew of the night and the morning just washed off it, and we were warm and comfortable underneath those blankets. We came back the next morning, and of course we lingered a bit there because as we came there in the evening and the sun was setting, that, what was the name of that mountain?
Glacier
Mountain just shone in the light of the setting sun as the shadows fell. And that was one of the most awesome experiences down there. But probably even a more awesome experience than that was as we went over the ledge from the Cloudy Pass and saw our pathway down, I have a picture of Heart Lake that was like a little fog in the woodlands all around it. And we knew that when we got to that place, we were close to the camp again. And that song that we sang tonight became a living experience for us. How Great Thou Art became just familiar at that time. We memorized it and sang it every step of the way. And when we came back down the place there, by the time we arrived back in camp, we were absolutely wiped. I was under the impression, and somebody confirmed it to me today, that it was, return trip was 29 miles. And we came down that hill all in one day. We arrived at the base of the camp there. I don't know, I don't recall much about the supper, but we must have had supper. But then they had an outdoor devotion, an outdoor worship service, and in that service, they had a foot washing ceremony. There was nothing in the world that was more comforting, humbling, soothing, but so, so renewing that we felt that we could just about get on our feet and get on with it again. But that was the kind of things that the forerunners did for us that so enriched us. And then to top it all off, at the conclusion of that service, this little girl, this little lady, blonde, but with a humongous voice, sang to all of us, "Climb every mountain, ford every stream, follow every rainbow till you find your dream." And I think we all wept with joy that we had a part in helping her to accomplish that which she had set her heart upon, and how it thrilled our hearts in doing it. Now, there was one other event that I think I can also mention that involves some of the work campers. During the week at one time, there were a couple, and I remember that warning, don't go anywhere without three people. And that was reiterated. But this couple wanted to get to see, climb the mountain behind the village to see the lake beyond. And just shortly after noon luncheon, the fella come running down to the base camp, and he said his partner had fallen down the cliff and wasn't able to move. And so, again, it was the forerunners who somehow found a rescue bucket and rope and what we needed, and we put together a posse. And John Hill, of course, being the forthright person, took charge, and away we charged up the mountain, and then he took the very special precautions that no one else would get hurt on it. And I remember Fern Van Cura, nurse, taking close watch over the gal that was in our in that bucket there. And she came to me and said, isn't there some way that we could speed up the process? She is suffering hypothermia. And she says, and if we don't get it down soon, I don't know if she can make it. So I talked to John and I says, you know, this is too big a job just for one. How about if you have one team that puts them down, leads them down to a certain level, I'll arrange with the others another team that will be in place, that when you get to that point, we will take the charge and take the person down the next level while they come forward and set up their own team. And that way, we doubled the speed and we came down the mountain in the afternoon, just as the helicopter arrived and flew over the camp, picked her up and took her to the hospital, and she was okay. But it was those kinds of engagements and involvements that made that place a place of wonder and joy of being partners in it. And I really wasn't part of the forerunners at all. It was Joanne that was the forerunner. And of course, I think that Gil Berg had checked out the capabilities of every one of the people that he had, and he knew that she would be able to do a good job of being the registrar. And that's where I had met her. We had only a few occasions where we were able to talk together. I marveled at the kind of confident, free openness with which she shared. She had said she was a teacher, and she said being at Holden gave her the freedom and the confidence to be able to go anywhere that she would be sent and to explore the possibilities of serving and doing her work there. So she took a map, put it up in front of her, closed her eyes, and her finger landed on Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, that's about the extent of our communications. And as I had indicated, perhaps there were a few more sentiments on Mark's heart. I was a stranger to her. And one of the things that I had done during that retreat, because I felt that I wanted to go there because it was a place away, a place where we could meet our peers, and a place where we could have that sense of renewing our perspectives. So in the evening, I'd go out in that stump behind the village there, and I'd contemplate, how can we, in our maturing years, relate with one another, because that's what we were here for, relate with one another in friendship and openness, without being, imposing on someone else or being negative towards one another, but exploring together freely and openly the possibilities that lie before me. So I tried my hand at a bit of poetry. I wrote a poem and put it under Joanne's doorway. And Marie Krell, who was from Saskatchewan, and I knew her well. I was her sister's her husband's best man. And she later told me that when Joanne got that letter, she says, "Who is this kooky Canadian who writes poetry and puts it on strangers' doorsteps?" And after I reflected on it a little bit, I thought, you know, she was probably right. It was a kooky thing to do. But what I marveled at, because we come from a background where put-downs were quite often the practice when we related with one another. But here was a person who saw things so objectively that all she did was ask a question. It wasn't a put-down, it was a question. Who is this guy anyhow? She didn't know me from anybody. But that's about how far it went. And then by the end of the week, when we went back on the boat, then everybody was saying their goodbyes. And of course, because Joanne was friends with them, and surprisingly, she's not on any of these pictures, because these pictures were the forerunners who did the outside work. She was in the office working for Gil Berg, and so she was part of the group, but yet very separate from it. And then when they said their goodbyes, John Hill gave her a very fond farewell hug, and as he brushed his black beard across her face, every aspiration of anything further on my part was brushed away as well. And all I got was a hesitant handshake and a reluctant forwarding address to her parental home before she packed up and went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And that's the stage of life that we shared together there. But it became so memorable to me. Later on, we had occasion to meet again simply because of the connections that we had made here. And we were married in February the following year.
And our sympathy to you in the loss of Joanne. We can tell how much she meant to you. Let's see, it's Judy and Bob sharing just a few experiences.
When I was riding up on a boat, I was wondering how we were going to get this 11 miles. And I kind of had vision. I'm going to have a white limousine there for us to go down the road. And sure enough, we drove in there with the, or coasted in there with the boat, and here was this green limousine, a 1961 International Steak Rack truck. So we all got on the back of that truck, 40 of us. That's about close, probably close to 4 ton on the back of that truck. And so up the hill we started up the switchbacks, and it was super low gear making some of the corners. And we made it all right to the village. And I really remember that part of it. And then the time that they brought up the diesel generators, they brought them up on the barge, and on the barge they had this big hoist to hoist them off and put them on the truck. And coming up the road with one at a time on the back of the truck, because they weighed more than 4 ton. And we actually, there were about 10 of us guys on the back of the truck with there. We actually had to get out and push on the truck on some of them switchbacks to get up the hill. And then when we got to the village here, well, we had planned ahead of time, and so we poured the cement slab just past the village here on the way to Heart Lake. You can see where those generators are set in the building there. And so Gil brought up some concrete mix, and we had to scrounge around and haul and pitch sand and gravel on the truck and bring down from the mine area. And we had no cement mixer, so we mixed it by hand in the wheelbarrows and then dumped it in. And then Gilbert was very specific. He had all the measurements for where the bolts are supposed to sit. There's 4 bolts set. And when the generators come, he says they have to fit. And so we come up there with the truck, and how do we unload them? We didn't have no backhoe or to lift them off. And so we remember from our physics classes in high school, we use a lever and a fulcrum and a roller. You raise them up, put the roller under, and start them down. They had a chain on the front of the rack of the truck so it didn't move too fast. And we got it down and set them on, and then back down the lake to get the second one. And the bolts all fit perfect. And then when we were building the chimney, we were wondering how in the world, that chimney was a lot, when we built it, it's a lot taller than it is now. It's been rebuilt since. Anyway, we built scaffolding, and we sure were glad that OSHA wasn't here. it would never have passed. And so we had some pulleys and pulling up the pails full of bricks, and we had Ken Barrett, he was from Minneapolis too, and he was a cement mason, and so he laid the brick, and we got that all done. And then come the time when one of the engineers come up from the mining company and took us into the mine shaft, the main mine shaft, and we walked 1 mile straight into the mountain. In ankle deep water, and we all had flashlights. He had a big helmet with a big miner's light on it, and we come by a hole in the main shaft there, and he said, "Shine your lights in there." And he shined your lights in there, and you couldn't see the end of the beam. He said, "That's about the size of about 5 football fields in there, hollowed out." And then as we continued on, we come to the main shaft that went down, and that also went up to levels up higher. where the ore was brought up and then dumped into these little rail cars and brought down the main shaft to the mine, to the mine building. And it was 23 seconds when they dropped that stone before it hit water. So those things still stick in my mind, how we got that stuff done. So.
Was your wife going to do anything?
Hmm?
Was your wife going to say anything?
Well, she did about the...
She's all done.
She finished up about the honeymoon.
I have only one story. I was a smelly, dirty guy after a month. And we all grew beards because we weren't about ready to try to figure out how to shave. So the girls composed a song, and I can't remember the melody now. We are the girls from Holden Village. We think beards make a horrible image. We don't smoke and we don't chew. And we don't like your beards on you. Oh, you may think we don't love you. Well, frankly, oh, we don't. And I get back at them on departure day and say, oh, we're going on the ramp up to the boat. All the guys were right there on either side, giving them a whisker rub on the way. Sonia will close it off.
Yes, I think we've sat a long time, but I would like to pay tribute to our oldest member. Sylvia Waterman told me once that she heard that somebody, I'm not sure who, but somebody did not want her to be a forerunner because she was too old. But the powers that be, I guess, passed her, and she was one of the best. And she was 29 years old, yes, and she was our oldest. And she isn't here, and she's been at all the other reunions, and a big leader, both when we were forerunners in 61 and all through the times we've had reunions. So she has written a letter. It's addressed to us, but I'm going to read it for all of you because I just think she's a wonderful person, and I would like to have you hear this. How I wish I was there with you for our 50th. Because of temporary walking problems, the trip out there and walking in the village would be too difficult. I know you will revel in being there together in our beloved place apart and sharing the memories that everything you see brings back. I hope your time together will be a memorable reflection of our first experience. For me, that month in June of 1961 was one of the highlights of my life. I even mentioned this in my obituary, which I have already written. So many memories flood back. Our foolhardy but exciting trek inside the Copper Mountain to the mining site. Our sleuthing trips to the miners' village, now long gone. Go check out any remains. Leray and I did that today. There is not much left. A few stair steps, not much more, but if you want to go out the road, you can see some little walls, not brick, but stone walls. Not much is left. Our stories of tables still set and clothes on the lines were later called only folk tales, but we know better. We saw it. And I vouch for that too. The miners' village must have been vacated awfully quickly. We found children's toys. We found dishes on tables. We found a flour bin that still had flour in it, but had been visited by rats and other varmints and so forth. So these things are true. The day that we girls dragged Tex out into the yard in his sleeping bag because he wouldn't work, leaving him a prisoner there in his natural state. That was a part of that. I think that Tex worked when he got started, but he was not a morning person. Bertha's spud nuts and marvelous meals for us on that old stove. Our labors of love, Fern and I as the honey dippers, cleaning out nasty toilets in the lodges. I think what happened, the plumbing wasn't operative, and there were lots of hikers that came through here, and they used the toilets, even though they knew they could not flush them. So that is what they had to clean out, and I wasn't on that duty, and I'm glad. And then she said the Bonanza Bruisers. This was the name of one of the work crews who thought that they were the toughest work group. And they were, because I was one of them. Our fun times, our devotional times, and the strong friendships formed. I especially remember those dear friends over the years who are with God now, and I miss them. Our time there blessed us more than we ever knew it would, and the influence we felt, and the influence we left it down through the years can never be measured. Holden Village became more than we ever hoped or dreamed. We recall with affection our leaders that month. And then she gives a quote from Dr. Bergstrand. Ah, yes, the forerunners. In 25 years traveling the world as an international youth director, I never encountered another group quite like them. They laid a solid foundation that has enabled Holden Village to become what it is. To God be the glory. And then a quote from Gil Berg. In my book of memories, meeting all of you forerunners stands out as one of the highlights of my long life. You were great, super great. Your enthusiasm was incredible, and I salute you. May God bless you richly. I, Sylvia, hope that you will all thank God while you are there for this wonderful experience that he gave us to share for all that came from it. And with love, Sylvia Wagerman.
Phil Rue, the husband of our forerunner, Mary Hedman Rue, will close this off with some final thoughts.
Just the thoughts. There's some book, a book that is in our rooms. You've probably seen it by Charles Lutz. And in it, there's a quote from Carol Hinderly. He said, "Sometimes I felt it was a shame that God gave a gift like this to God's least imaginative people, the Lutherans." And we're aware of it. It's a big experiment, and it's a big gift, and I guess God has always done that. John Victor Halverson, one of our beloved professors, used to say, I think I've heard this quote other places too, but in his high little voice, "How odd of God to choose the Jews." And how odd of God to choose people like us, to be here, like you people who are the forerunners, and before them, the miners. The whole story and history that came up. I'm aware of Gil Berg, who was so impressed with how well this place is built, that it's still here. And shelters us even these many years later. All a part of the story of who we are and what's going on here. And the many people who have been so involved and very touched, as these people obviously have been, to share their stories, and your stories are added to it. We are all here, as Apostle Paul said, as servants of Christ, and stewards of God's mysteries. And if that doesn't define what goes on here in that hospitality of this place, that we are exploring what it is in different places to be servants of Christ and what Christ is about, and stewards of those mysteries with all of its marvelous questions and opportunities and things to be. And here is that place apart where we can wrestle with these things. We can be together in a safe place. We can talk. We can share. We can listen. And we can be together in a way that celebrates all that is the vision that God has for us. And so thank you for putting your elbows to... what do you call it, the lever here, or the grease, the foot to the lever, the grease that you scraped off the stoves, and we're enjoying everything. For all that you've done, we're grateful. For all that you have done in being here, we're grateful. So we say thank you. Blessings to all of you who are continue to make the story and tell the story. It's a good one. Yeah, thanks be to God.
Amen.